G'day, I'm Lola Berry, nutritionist, author, actor, TV presenter, and professional oversharer. This podcast is all about celebrating failure because I believe it's a chance for us to learn, grow, and face our blind spots. Each week, I'll interview a different guest about their highs as well as their lows, all in a bid to inspire us to fearlessly fail. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Fearlessly Failing. Today's guest is Aussie actor Lincoln Yunus. This actor is blowing up all over Australia, although I have to say, if you were a Home and Away fan or are a Home and Away fan, he was part of the River Boys gang, Casey Braxton. And I used to be obsessed with Home and Away. So the second he said yes to doing this pod, I was like, oh my goodness, Casey Braxton. Anyway, I'm really goobering out right now. But present day, this actor is doing so, so well here in Australia. He's done amazingly well in America as well. He's also had some setbacks, which we definitely talk about in this pod too. But overall, can I just say, I was blown away by this chat because Link is open, generous, kind, and so humble. Like, no ego, real deal. What you see is what you get. Doing so well. He's also the Boss Spring Ambassador and has some really exciting stuff coming out in 2022 acting wise. So keep your eyes on the tally for this awesome actor. Thank you so much for sharing your time, Link. You're a legend. Lincoln Yunus, I am so pumped. I've been wanting you on this pod for quite some time, my friend.
I've been playing hard to get.
you have, but we've made it happen and I'm so excited. There are so many elements of your career that I think I want to start early days because last night I watched an episode of Tangle.
Oh, you did.
So were you in year 11 when you got cast for that?
Yeah, the first season I had just started year 11. I'd moved from Bendigo to Melbourne.
Yeah.
And I was pretty young.
So good though, like to cut your teeth with so many Australian greats.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was the best kind of trial by fire I could have hoped for. And I was learning very quickly from some incredible people.
So I've just dived straight in. For people playing along at home, an amazing actor both here in Australia and in America doing good things. But, yeah, to get such a role at such a young – because early on, weren't you like, soccer is my passion.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do. But then there was the flick in – what made you go from athlete to wanting to be an actor?
I think sport had always been a big part of my life because I had a lot of energy and a lot of, you know, I was moving around a lot and it kind of centered me. So anything to do with movement kind of grounded my mind enough to focus on what I needed to. And I was also a very shy kid.
I was very, very shy.
Yeah. And I used to watch a lot of movies at the cinema. I used to review movies for my mum's paper.
That's a pretty cool gig.
It was really cool. It was actually very funny. I remember, sorry, I know I'm digressing already, but
no, digress
that's,
away.
That's going to be the podcast.
Do it as much as you want.
Yeah. I remember I had some kind of deal with mum in the paper where I could get 2 free movie tickets if
that's
I would
right.
review the movie
yeah.
for the paper. And I remember there was this girl I had a crush on, who I won't say the name of, but I was in class one day and back then, you know, you'd write on a piece of paper and it'd get passed around the class
totally.
And whatnot. And it went all the way around the class and it got to her and she opened it and like smiled and then she looked up and smiled and wrote something and then it came all the way back
you were
and
so
it just
excited.
Said, no.
Yeah. I've heard this story and
oh,
I'm
you
like,
have?
How? No, I love it. I'm so glad you told it, but like, that's a backfire of a really cool, like, who doesn't
good.
Want to go to the movies?
And that's when I decided to be an actor. No. I was like, I'll show you. No, anyway, after that, we moved to Melbourne. I searched around for an agent for a while. And then this woman called Joanna Maloj took a chance on me. And the first audition I went for was Tangle.
How good.
Yeah.
That's pretty, like, now, you know, you... you've got such a body of work behind you, but you know that it's uncommon to get the first thing.
I do.
For,
it's incredibly
right?
uncommon, but also it's such an interesting industry where everyone goes through similar things at different times. So, right. you know, I had a really great run for a while, and then I had you know, a couple of years of unemployment at a strange time.
Yeah.
And everyone, I think unemployment is where you do a lot of growing and learning.
Totally.
And then when you're working, that's kind of the reward. And it is work. And it's incredibly difficult work sometimes, but the harder moments are the in between when, you know, you're living in uncertainty and things don't always make sense, and you just kind of have to find your equilibrium in different ways. But to start with Tangle was just like, you know,
what a gift.
And the caliber of the older actors in that were just it was I still am very grateful for that.
And then to go from, so you've done over 700 episodes of Home and Away, right, as a river boy.
Yeah, it's a
Casey
lot, isn't
Braxton.
It? Yeah.
You know, there's fan-made videos of you on YouTube of all the funny things that Casey Braxton did.
No, I
actually
didn't.
Quite good.
Oh, really?
Very entertaining.
Oh, my God. Well, 700 episodes, you know, there's a couple of bits in there, but that's incredible. I didn't know that.
I imagine you would have got a whole different skill set from something like Home and Away, because you're faster turnaround, right? It's super fast turnaround. You're learning stuff really, really quickly.
Yeah, Home and Away is also an amazing training ground in a different way. It's you learn the craft and the maintenance and the minutiae of the technical side, especially because you have very little time to mess up, I guess. You are getting lines sometimes on the day, sometimes on the spot, and you're going through, you know, 5 episodes a week.
That's
which
mental,
you know, which is some of the fastest shooting in the world. So that's where you kind of can refine the technical side for sure. And I had a really wonderful 3.5 years on there.
Yeah. That's my first memory of you. I was Home and Away. Yeah, I loved Home and Away.
Aww.
Aussie kid.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
natural.
No, of course.
So is it then after Home and Away you were like, right, I've done my time? Because like the trajectory for a lot of Australians that go to America is Neighbours or Home and Away.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I'm going to jump the pond. I'm going to be a little fish in a ginormous pond. Was that kind of your next plan?
No, my trajectory was a bit different. So I had the 3 seasons of Tangle.
Yeah.
And the third one was in the middle of Home and Away. So I took a break to do that and then came back. And then when I finished Home and Away, I did head over to LA. Oh, actually, I took my mum to Ireland, which was really cool because she's part Irish. And then when I was leaving Ireland, I got a job back here. So I came back and I did Love Child.
That's right. But you were planning on going to America?
I was planning
or something?
On going to LA, and then fortunately I worked here for the next year and a half on different things. But it was very funny because it was a good lesson in not saying goodbye to all your friends.
Yeah, you
had
a big goodbye party.
I had a big goodbye party, and then I was back the following week and everyone was like, oh, that was weird.
So, do you know, for me, I've just got a green card and it took me 3 years. Thank you. But it took me 3 years. And so I was planning a goodbye party literally for 2 of those 3
Don't
years.
Do it.
It takes so long, right?
Yeah.
To actually get the, like, if anyone listening, like visas and paperwork, it's a nightmare to get it
visas
across.
And green cards and
so hard.
All of that stuff is incredibly difficult. And it's kind of you're chasing your tail a little bit because you can't go over to find work without a visa,
and
you can't get a visa without work.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of times I was, you know, over there and I'd get close to a job and then not have the visa. That is one of the more difficult sides.
Totally. And you talk to a lot of Aussie actors that are like, the hardest bit is actually getting yourself there.
Yeah.
So, okay, there are so many exciting things I want to talk to you about, because I'm a massive theatre nerd as well, and so I cannot wait to talk to you about that. But so you did Love Child, so you did took mum to Ireland.
Yep, took mum to Ireland.
Didn't go to America.
Came back, did the first season of Love Child. Oh, it was their second season.
Yep.
Did that, went into a show called Hiding.
Yes, got that in my notes.
And then
Down Under? Did you do a Down Under?
Yeah, I think I did Hiding, Then Down Under, then Love Child 3.
Got it.
So there was a, yeah, and in the middle of that I went back over to LA just to kind of touch base.
Yeah.
And I think I remember that because it was the evolution of hair. It was like, it was like, I don't know, 60s hair, blonde Gold Coast teen hair, longer hair, dyed black, and then back to 60s hair.
Amazing.
So, yeah, yeah.
So good. What have I got? I feel like I've got surf hair today. Like you've got a surf thing going on.
This is the longest I've had my hair ever.
It feels surf to me.
It's very surf.
Okay, so when did you then go, okay, a lot of actors that I admire are theatre actors as well. Mm. I want to build my theatre chops. What made you, was that after an American stint where you were like, okay, I'm coming back to Australia, I need to experience this?
I'd always wanted to do theatre. I did it at school and for me I kind of chase what scares me.
Yeah.
Especially when things aren't shifting, you know, certain things in my life might not be moving or evolving, and I kind of then will chase what scares the hell out of me. And I had found at that point, so after I finished Love Child 3, I felt like I'd done enough here to take a little hiatus and go over to America and try and, get my foot in the door. And so I went over for two different stints, I think.
And you were getting right to the line a few times, weren't you?
Yeah. It's a story that a lot of people have, you know. I got a couple jobs, then they didn't work out, and then I got close. And essentially I was just hemorrhaging money over there.
Oh,
because
as we all know,
you don't have an income over there or anywhere when you're traveling, it goes. So then I had to come back and I had probably one of the worst years of my life, I think, in terms of just at the time it felt like that, but it was just a big year of change. There was just a lot of different things that were either coming to an end or not going the way I thought they would. And so I got back and I had very little money, and I kind of would get close to jobs here and then wouldn't get them. And around that time I went, oh, screw this. I'm just – While you know, all the things that I've known aren't happening the way I thought, I will just try and get into theatre because that seems just as risky as everything else, and it scares me. And all my friends, a lot of my friends came from theatre, and a lot of the actors I admired started in theatre, and so I really wanted to test that side of myself.
And you got to work with Ian Sinclair, who's one of my teachers.
Nobby, yeah.
Oh, Nobby. So I trained at 16th Street, and I'm seeing him very soon. I cannot wait. He's one of my favorite teachers.
Yeah.
I will. And Zoe Tarakis has also been on this podcast. Yeah. I love Zoe as well. So when I did my research and I saw the interview from Abridge, I was like, was that like a just such, you would have learned so much from Ian and the cast.
Yeah, I had. So I did a play prior to View from the Bridge at Griffin and Malthouse, which was called The Homosexuals. And that was a satirical farce, which was
set in Sydney, right?
Set in Potts Point, Sydney. Yeah. And it was just high energy and hilarious and, you know, quite divisive in areas. And that was really wonderful to kind of branch out into, you know, comedic stuff because I haven't had many chances to do that.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of fun. And then after that, View from the Bridge came up and, again, auditioned for that, not knowing kind of if I'd be right for it because, you know, it's a Sicilian immigrant in the 1960s and he has to sing and the dialect and the
You were Rodolfo, right?
Yeah, I was playing Rodolfo. So I had to learn Sicilian, both the dialect back then and the language, and sing a cappella 1930s jazz sung by four black tenors back then.
Wow,
and so I was
so
kind of
good.
Like, there's a lot here.
Yeah.
And then Nobby as well.
Oh, you would have learned.
Which I learned, he's the master of kind of American classics. So, yeah, it was. And to do it in a space like the Old Fitz where, you know, has so much character and to completely change that setting because we made it into the round,
yes.
which normally it's not that.
Yeah.
And to have such a minimalist stage with nothing on it but a chair leaves no room to kind of there's no safety nets,
yeah.
which I really which really interested me. And it was an amazing experience.
Is it true that Anthony LaPaglia rocked up, who played Eddie in the
Yeah.
I mean, were you just like, oh my God?
Yeah, it was pretty surreal. He played it on Broadway. He played Eddie on Broadway of their rendition of A View from the Bridge. And
Many moons ago.
Yeah. And he was in town shooting something. Anyway, one of the final nights we come on stage from the from where the audience had come in.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of aware of people in the audience before we start.
Yeah.
I think all of us in the cast noticed him sitting on the stairs, and it wasn't yeah. even sitting in a seat because we had extra
yeah.
seating on the stairs and he was sitting there. Anyway, that was very cool, and he stood up at the end
and
gave
a legend.
An and yeah, we had a lot of really inspiring people come and watch, and it was, yeah, it was such a good experience for me.
I asked, this is going to put you on the spot, but I asked Zoe what one of the biggest takeaways from working with Ian was, and Zoe said, be on voice, like just be on voice. Where's your voice?
Yeah.
What a gift, right? Because I think Zoe started working with Ian without any training whatsoever.
Yeah.
So was there any takeaway that you got? I mean, there would be so many, but off the top of your head.
There was a lot of takeaways for everyone in the cast. I think for me, how much you can fit into silence and stillness.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. The power of silence and stillness I've kind of carried beyond that in my own life. I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with, pauses or silence or maybe not knowing what to say or how to react. And I think in the past I would have jumped to feel that silence.
Totally.
Or that void.
That would almost be a natural reflex.
It's a very human.
To not be uncomfortable.
Yeah. But there's a lot of learning and a lot of value in just sitting in
yeah.
that. And there was a moment in the play, which I can say now because it's done, but at the very end there's this massive kind of climax and it's incredibly chaotic and dramatic and it just cuts to black.
Mm.
And usually there's movement that indicates to the audience when they're that close that it's time to clap.
Mm-hmm.
And we just did not move every night. We wouldn't move and we wouldn't – and the lights wouldn't come on and then nothing would indicate the end until the audience
– So the audience
– The audience actually cued the,
wow.
the end.
Wow.
And so there were some nights where it would go for, you know, like – 3 to 5 minutes of them of and you'd hear people just uncomfortable
shuffling
doing
in their
that
seats.
Cough
yeah,
where,
yeah,
or,
yeah.
or doing the like one would go to clap and then no one would clap with them or
oh,
or they'd
wow.
be crying or they'd be and
yeah,
so there was
it's full on
yeah and just sitting in that was I was wow. like ah that's how you create tension in theater you know
so cool. Did you find it hard with theater? Like, because you live and breathe that character, right? Like, it is you. And I know it's the same, definitely in a different way, I think, for television and film. But mm. how did you ever feel like I'm bringing too much of Rodolfo home with me? Like, I need to separate. Like, you're a nature kid from what I can tell.
Yeah.
Did you have, like, Zoe talked about sometimes more with Wentworth stuff, but like, they'd come home and be like, oh, I'm carrying Reb with me. I'm carrying this character
yeah.
with me too much. Does that ever happen to you or less in theatre maybe? I don't know. I just think theatre feels so – to me it feels so visceral, you know.
It is. And definitely those – there were some nights that were more elevated or heightened or we hit some kind of synchronicity with the drama and the storytelling and the audience because
yeah.
it is an interplay with audience and storytelling and you do kind of shift and you should shift with the audience a bit. So those kind of nights, yeah, I would get home and there would be either like elation or kind of fatigue. Or I'd be kind of over, you know, I'd just be adrenaline kind
like
of
overstimulated. Yeah.
But Look, the method thing is an interesting kind of concept with acting. I think
I was going to ask what your process was. Like, are you – because you've done so much time in America.
Yeah.
And I've just been there, so I've had a couple of American actors on here and they're very heavily into method, substitution, like the Chubbuck style.
Yeah.
Whereas here, my training's all been with Ian, so clean beat, clean action.
Yeah.
5 points of story, like very British style. So, but America is like you walk onto a set and there's a lot of method actors.
Yeah, I don't have one kind of style or method or technique. I think it changes per job and per character. I don't feel the need to be method a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Even with the American stuff. I would drop into my normal accent between takes.
Yeah.
And that's just the accent side. But that made me feel like there was a distinction.
Yeah.
You know?
It grounds you too. The Aussie accent is very grounding.
It's very grounding and it puts, you know, it's hard. It might work for some projects where they're short.
Yeah.
But to be filming for 9 months to a year with crew and cast that you're going to be close with, that didn't interest me. Not saying it won't one day, but for accents that I'm comfortable with, that I was happy to change out of.
Yeah.
But in terms of the character side, I think it's really healthy if you do go method to have a way of separating that in your own life. I think there's a danger because sometimes it's not always the most helpful to a production, and a production is a collaboration. And so sometimes I feel it can be selfish to maybe the people you're working with if it's not helpful
collectively,
yeah. You know?
Totally.
So method can be great,
yeah.
But it can also be an imposition. And I think it's about, like all projects, kind of what's best for the story and what's best for the final product.
And I think – as well, I'm super pro mental health and I know you are too, your 10-kilometer challenge.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I think that any actor needs to understand their own psychology because really at the end of the day, good acting is human behavior, right?
Totally.
So I just think even when you talked about that tough year where you had that so many changes, like you probably learned so much about yourself and your psychology and your like the way you are mentally, you know. You need to look back when you've kind of got perspective and you're like, oh, actually, that really crappy thing happened because I had to sit with that or learn that about myself or face that blind spot, you know.
Yeah.
Understanding psychology I think is like a non-negotiable for an actor. That's just my
– Well, I think it's vital because at least for me, the reason I wanted to be an actor was because I had a deep interest in humans and the way humans worked and thought and acted. And so I think if you are too fuzzy in your own psychology and you don't understand yourself, then you don't have an objective view of different people. And you can sometimes, like, especially with characters that might appear on page, you know, horrid or you know, they may be the villain or they may – and it reduces your scope or your range of understanding.
Yeah.
If you don't have an equilibrium in yourself enough to not judge yourself and not judge others and not judge the character. So I think having the time in between jobs is really about learning about yourself because then when you do have a job, which is a wonderful time, you can immerse yourself in it without risk and without potentially it being debilitative.
That makes total sense. Okay, I've got to ask about Grand Hotel because that the audition process and the like how quickly you had to be in Miami sounds like such a crazy turnaround. And can you share a little bit about so I think you self-taped. You're in Australia when you self-taped.
Yeah, so the backstory with that, again, this industry, you don't know how things will work, but I do think that if you keep doing the right thing or is, you know, keep doing the work, eventually it'll come along. You know, whatever it needs to be will come along. So for me, I'd finished A View from the Bridge. There was another season at Glen Street, but in between that was the Christmas holidays. I left my reps over in America, which was a hard decision because they were, you know, they were on page excellent, and they were during the time, but that kind of experiment didn't work after a while, and I felt like I needed to reclaim my own independence and power, and I was losing that. So then I did what I feel like a few people do. I just went to Europe over the holidays. So I was good. Like, I'll just spend the money I've got and go to Europe because that feels like the right thing to do. And I did, and it was wonderful. And I got back and did a week at Glen Street, and this audition, a slew of auditions came up.
Yeah, there was like a big Netflix thing or something, I think.
There was about 8 to 10 auditions in 4 days, which was a lot. Wow. And, you know, as actors listening to this will know, those kind of auditions can be anywhere from 8 to 25 pages each. So it's a lot. And I got to the last one, which was Grand Hotel, and I had felt like I'd done a great job of the other stuff, and I just didn't want to kind of not do a good job. So I almost cancelled it. And I went, oh, I'll sleep on it, and woke up the next morning and just quickly tried to learn it. And I went in to the casting room, did it. They sent the tape over, and it was Kirsty McGregor, who was a great champion of mine, and she, I have her to thank in a big way, because she fought for me to get the role, unbeknownst to me at the time. And then
didn't you do your audition down the barrel of the camera or something halfway through?
Yeah.
Which is pretty ballsy. Like,
well, yeah, because I was kind of like, I one attitude I've kind of tried to adopt in the last couple of years is because you do so many auditions if you're lucky enough to have that opportunity. And when you do, the strike rate is usually very, very low. So to stop yourself becoming de-energized or jaded or, you know, cynical about the stuff, I just honestly tried to look at it at being grateful every time it would come along, because it's a chance to perform. Mm. It's a chance for someone hopefully to watch you perform, and that's quite a pleasure. Like, that's a great thing. And so in saying that, I've started doing tapes in a way that I would enjoy doing it, and I would enjoy watching it. And it's maybe a bit different, but that gives me energy rather than just trying to do the same, you know, the way it is on the page or whatever. So at the time I was like, I'm going to barrel the camera because that seems really fun. And it kind of worked. So, yeah.
Is it true once you got the role, like 30 hours later, you were
I got a call on Sunday. Like, of all, which is, that doesn't happen. I got from my agent, and I was helping a friend with a tape at the time, and I walked out the back and it was like, hi. And Natasha Harrison, who's my agent at United, she called and said, hey, so I got good news. And I went, oh, okay. She said, you got this job. And I went, wait, that job? Because that was the one that
you
least
thought.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. I walked out. I remember texting my friend and I said, well, that was a big ball of average. So you don't always know. And then I was on a flight, I think, a couple of days later.
Crazy.
Went to Miami.
Shot the pilot. Eva Longoria?
Yeah.
Is she amazing?
Oh, she's incredible. She is proof that you can have success, have fame, have all the things in the world and still be an incredibly lovely, magnanimous
person.
Wasn't
she heavily pregnant at one stage?
She was. When we, So when she directed the third episode of Grand Hotel, which after we got picked up was the first episode back.
Yeah.
So, and she was very pregnant and just being a boss and just directing everyone. And then in typical Eva style, if you know her, she just went and had the baby, was texting from, you know, the hospital room, and then was back on set and with her little bub. And
amazing.
Just, yeah, she's
force.
Quite amazing.
Yeah. That, so I haven't seen it, but I've watched the trailer. I've watched a lot of cast interviews. It looks like it was so much fun.
It was so much fun. It was a really good kind of heightened murder mystery, which I really enjoyed watching and doing.
Yeah.
And it was, there were so many moments in that were surreal and I mean, they built the entire hotel in a studio after the pilot. Like,
so the pilot was done in Miami, but the rest was a
The pilot
studio.
Was shot in the Fountain Blue in Miami, which is a very famous hotel, and it's no, you know, Sinatra had a residency there, and it's just it's iconic.
Yeah.
And then we got picked up, which
5% chance, I heard you say in another interview.
Very, it's very rare to get picked up in a pilot. So that's why you'll see a lot of pilots be made, but then very few get picked up.
Wow.
And so that was the best call of my life, I think, actually.
Right.
Yeah, that was amazing. Anyway, 4 months later, they built the hotel in a studio in Manhattan Beach in LA.
Oh, wow.
So it's very weird, and Star Wars was shooting next door and Avatar was shooting on the other side, and it just...
Oh, my God. Amazing,
I was in
though.
My waiter outfit going, what's going on?
How fun, though. Like, there's
so
your
fun.
LA, like, oh, so exciting. So then... Talk to me about Lost Boys, because weren't you like literally set your scene was the next day and everything got shut down with COVID or something, or your first scene of the was it a movie remake?
No, it was an
actual series.
Yeah, it was a real bummer.
Far out.
Yeah, that so Lost Boys.
It's like a 1987 movie, iconic.
Yeah, yeah, iconic. I loved it growing up. It's what made vampires cool.
Right.
And it is such a cult classic. It's super edgy and just really, really cool.
Yeah.
And Kiefer Sutherland is the iconic vampire.
Is that
in
who
it?
You were playing?
And that's who I was playing.
Oh, dude.
So he's this sociopathic kind of super charismatic but
fun.
Psychotic
fun.
Vampire, which I've wanted to play for ages, just to have the kind of not villain, kind of villain role. Anyway, so there was a worldwide casting for that, and there was a lot of stages, and eventually got the role, and then went to North Carolina, which was a dream, and was there for a month in pre-production, and then COVID, and then we got shut down 10 hours before started filming, which. Yeah, it's a bummer. It's a real bummer.
Because it sounded like there's a lot of articles on it.
Yeah,
like in the
it was going to be very, very cool. And the showrunner was Rob Thomas, who created like iZombie and Veronica Mars.
Oh, wow,
And the director is Marcos Siega, who did Dexter and True Blood. And he just actually directed the revamp of Dexter. So, look.
Has it been put on ice or you don't know?
I think it's probably done, unfortunately.
No.
Yeah.
So, but I've got to say, like, then you've come back to Australia
yeah.
and you have not stopped.
Mm.
Like, Doctor Doctor.
Yeah.
I have actually watched you on Doctor Doctor in this room on the projector because we were watching an episode. Yeah, because Jane looks after so many of the actors and art. And I was like, Home and Away days. And that's when I... put everything together. That must be such a fun
look.
Character.
It was really fun. More so the cast and crew. Like they were because they've done so many seasons of it. They were
it's like
so
season five.
Friendly and welcoming and wonderful. And when I got back from LA, so after Lost Boys, I was waiting in LA for about 7 months. Oh, 6 months. Contractually, and there was the Civil War that kind of happened there and there was a lot of stuff, which I won't go into here, but it just was one of the most traumatic times over there, which it was for a lot of people, but it was psycho. And so when I got back, I needed to kind of decompress and did hotel quarantine and then got out of there.
I've done mine recently.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Did you have fresh air?
My window's open this much.
Oh, take it. Take it.
I know. I would every day I just put my head in the window.
Yeah, totally. I just
did yours windows open?
No. No.
Oh, yes.
No.
That's what scared me.
But, you know, it's okay. People have worse stories.
Do you know what I think? It's a once in a lifetime. It'll never happen again.
I, to be honest, apart from the lack of fresh air, I really needed it when I got back. And I was pretty weird when I got back because I hadn't, I just hadn't seen anyone in like 6 months, really.
Because you would have been in a lockdown in America, right?
Totally. Yeah. So I didn't see anyone for like 100 days. And then in that time, I kind of created this workout group, which because I had a few friends get COVID and they got really unfit and were sick. And so I started this kind of workout group for them, and then it grew, and then it became this community, but it was all online.
So good.
And then started seeing a couple of friends towards the end of that, and then I went on a road trip. All this crazy stuff happened on the road trip. I got back, I got on a plane, went into quarantine, and then got out, and Australia was like, what's going on? And I was like, why are you near me?
Yeah, right?
Why are you talking to me?
Yeah.
So it took about 3 months to come down from that.
Yeah.
And to be able to film in a place like Mudgee and, you know, with such a kind crew, yeah, it was really healing.
Australia is super healing.
Oh, it's so healing.
I've only been in America for 6 months, but someone said to me right before I came back, what are you most looking forward to? And I was like, safety. You take it such for granted. Like just being able to go for a hike at any time of the day or like if you want to walk down barefoot to the shops, you can walk down barefoot to the shops.
Or in Ugg boots, as I've been finding. I discovered Ugg boots recently and I haven't stopped wearing them.
I actually read an interview with you where someone said the question was like, what's your must like watching TV show things? And you're like, Ugg boots, popcorn.
Yep.
Popcorn with coconut oil? Did you say that?
And tahine. Which is
seasoning.
It's a, I think it's a Mexican lime chili.
Oh my
seasoning.
God.
Yeah, which an ex-girlfriend of mine showed me this combination and it's
that's
amazing.
On popcorn.
On popcorn.
Oh, bring it on.
So you should try it in this room when you're watching a movie on it. It's honestly, it's.
Sign me up. That
it's
sounds
really great. Yeah.
So, okay, so you've decompressed, you've taken up all the Aussie healing vibes, Doctor comes along. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like, I think I watched one of your first eps and it just seemed like you were it felt so easy to watch.
Oh, thanks.
No, you know what I mean? Like, did it feel like that? Like, it was just like a family kind of vibe.
It was like an antidote to a lot of the things going on in the world. So it was incredibly, it was an incredibly easy shoot in the best way. There wasn't too much to navigate.
So, but I hear you've got so many other projects going. Like, speaking of the surf hair, Barons, 1970s, set in the 70s, surf.
Yeah. So, I can't say too much, but essentially, I'm playing an American pro surfer in the 1970s.
Oh, sorry, but what about that? Sounds amazing.
It's really cool. It's really, really cool. I'm really excited for people to see it. And it has been 4 months of the best experience I've ever had on a set.
Have you wrapped or you?
We've wrapped.
Oh,
we've
wrapped.
We wrapped about a month ago, and to have that during lockdown was such a godsend.
Oh yeah, and you'd be in the ocean a lot
of
the
time. I was in the ocean. It's my favorite place.
So good.
Which I will say, in theory, was great, but it was winter. It was the height of winter. But I hope you like it. I think it will be something very special.
And you have another, so After the Verdict, that's coming out next year as well, right?
It's coming, probably around the same time as Barons. But I start filming that, start rehearsing in a few days and then start filming in a couple of weeks.
You haven't stopped, literally.
It's a good time right now.
Psycho.
But yeah, not always like that. So
do you intend on going back to America when it calms down?
Yeah, I will go back because I feel like, you know, a lot of my life is still there. And in a perfect world, I would love to kind of straddle Australia and America because I'd happily.
That's the dream, right?
It is the dream, and I'd happily work here constantly if there were consistent jobs. I'll finish After the Verdict, and then there's a couple of things which might go, but also other kind of ventures I'd like to pursue around that time. And then once that's done, I'll head back to the States.
And you're an ambassador for Boss, is that right? I've saw the photos. Amazing.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's really exciting.
It was really
too
cool. Yeah. The Hugo Boss team are wonderful. So I was very happy that they got me on as their ambassador, especially when I had a massive beard and Jesus hair.
It worked. They gave you like a little man bun for some photos.
Yeah.
It worked.
It worked, yeah.
So have you trained with Anthony Mindell? Is that why you did his did he get you on just because?
No, I had a lot of friends kind of train with him. Aussies love him and he loves the Aussies.
Yeah.
And he, I guess, same circles and whatnot. So we became kind
he's
of.
He's unreal.
Oh, he's so good. He's so good.
And his less method is just like get out of your head,
in
the moment.
I did a little bit just to kind of see what he was talking about. And it's basically creating on the spot, yeah, which is a wonderful exercise. And I think it really helps because things do change on set that you couldn't prepare for, and to be able to have that skill to just go with something is quite useful. But he's a lovely man, and
I've audited him a little bit, and I love how he's like, keep your sides. Like, he's like very
Like, which you can't do on a set, but no. it is it's very helpful, I think, especially about what I was saying before. You do kind of get this fatigue, I think, when you audition a lot, or you don't audition a lot,
and then you put so many eggs,
you put so much into an audition, and it's kind of the beauty and the curse of acting in this industry is that you can be absolutely perfect for a role, you can give the perfect read, you can know somebody involved, you can do all the things, you can see signs. Like, I remember auditioning for something, and I saw just randomly the name on the side of a bus on the way home, and I was like, oh, that means something. And it didn't.
Yeah.
But so there's all these meaningless.
Do you know what that is, though, in psychology? It's literally called
confirmation bias, or is it the
your brain gets sticky for something when it wants it. It's like when you break up with someone, you see ex's car everywhere.
Totally.
It's this like psychology, I think they call it sticky. And say you do this audition for like something Warner Brothers, next minute all you're seeing is Warner Brothers things. It's
like your brain
right, kind of so fascinating.
Focuses on
I could talk about brains all day.
Oh, me too. But then the other side of it is sometimes you might not think you're right at all, and you might have, you know, thought you did a terrible audition, or you might have done something, whatever, and you might get the role, and it's because someone saw what you didn't see. So you're not always right and you're not always wrong.
Totally.
All you can do is keep going.
I heard you say in the Anthony podcast, and I love it because – I just think it's such a good little mantra, stay in your lane. You're like, listen, I'm listening to a lot of hip-hop at the moment, and I think it's just so handy, especially in the Australian acting world, because it can be so the difference I noticed studying in Australia, you'll put a scene up, say, for an Ian class, mm-hmm, and no one will really clap, right? But that's fine. You know you're being sized up though.
Mm.
In America, you put a scene up at Chubbuck or whatever school you're at, everyone cheers the second that you get off. So there's this less – I guess it's because there's so much more opportunity over there, and so there's less, you know, oh, I don't want
– I think it's about discernment, and it's about what you place value in.
Yeah,
so
okay.
If you – because I agree with what you just said, which can be it can misdirect. It can be a misdirect either way.
Yeah.
You know, something you can make it out to be so big or so small, and that can be unhealthy, or it can be healthy.
Totally.
But I think what I've found really helpful is at the end of the day coming back to, you know, listening to people I really respect and respect their judgment and objectivity, and listening to what I think is a good version of what I can offer. And if I deliver that, that's really all I can hope for.
Because happy days.
Yeah, you could break down things into oblivion trying to understand, and sometimes you just won't understand.
Mm.
So at least – which you know, is a freeing concept, or it can be quite it can kind of bring you down. But the point is, if you set out to do something that you have set yourself – and you achieve that, great.
Oh, I love it. Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane.
Oh, Link, I could talk to you all day. You are an absolute legend. I'm so excited for the future for you. I can't wait to watch the rest of your career unfold. And hopefully I'll see you in LA soon as
well. Hell yeah. We'll go have a smoothie and a latte or something.
So. Yeah. Something with mushrooms and all the health things they've got over there.
Totally.
Thank you so much, my friend. You're wonderful.
You are.
That's a wrap on another episode of Fearlessly Failing. As always, thank you to our guests. And let's continue the conversation on Instagram. I'm at Yummo Lolaberry. This poddy, my word for podcast, is available on all streaming platforms. I'd love it if you could subscribe, rate, and comment. And of course, spread the love.